Matt Rothschild here. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie's off today. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network all across the great state of Wisconsin and around the world on the World Wide Web. I'm joined by my usual guest host, Angela Lang of Block, and excited to introduce to you one of the leading intellectuals on the left over the last many decades. His name is Bill Fletcher Jr. Bill is a talk show host, a writer, an activist, and a trade unionist. He's got a couple novels out. He's also the co-author of a book called Solitary Divided and the author of They're Bankrupting Us, 20 Other Myths About Unions. Big union activist. And he's been writing recently after the election about the really important issue of Trump and fascism and how we overcome it. So why don't we just start, Bill, because I think this is the crucial question, but just for a little background, how do you explain the disaster that happened on November 5th?
So thanks, Matt, and thanks, Angela. Good to be on board with both of you. So my starting point, Matt, is very different from others, many others. I don't think that there was one explanation. I think that there were multiple things. I think it was a perfect storm. And so that's one of the reasons I was very angry with Bernie Sanders' response after the election, where he dumped the whole thing as about economics. And it's not. I mean, it's like there is certainly an economic component. Every incumbent administration that went through the COVID period has suffered losses, except in Mexico. The issue of inflation certainly was something that people were, it was very hard to run against. And no incumbent in the US history has ever successfully run for re-election when there was inflation. So we had those factors. But in addition to that, I think it's important to understand that a political current has been developing for years, which came together as what we know as MAGA. And so we have the revanchism, as they would say in Europe, the politics of revenge and resentment. We have the racism, we had misogyny dripping from the banners of the Republican Party. And all of these came together to speak to a lot of anger that's out there, a lot of what I'm calling the COVID PTSD, the whole experience of COVID and what that meant for many people, all of these things. And there were certainly mistakes on the part of the Harris campaign, both tactical and strategic. But the one thing that I would say that was missing from her argument was that the economic problem was not only about inflation. It was the result of 50 years of neoliberal globalization. Mm-hmm. And so to me, it's sort of like if you imagine water saturated with salt, and then you add a little bit more salt and you really stir it up, you super saturate it, and it still looks like it's clear. And then you drop one grain of salt into the water and all of it falls to the bottom. That one grain of salt was inflation and COVID. That one grain of salt fell into the water and everything dropped. And people started feeling the results of 50 years of neoliberal globalization. That is what Harris should have been talking about.
And Vance played on that too by saying, look, the Democrats brought you these free trade deals and people got screwed by them. And so it was kind of a flip.
But it was disingenuous. See, that's the thing that really, really gets to me, right? And which is why it doesn't make any sense for anybody to leave the Democratic Party and go to the Republican Party looking for any kind of economic justice. Neoliberalism was fully introduced into the United States by the Reagan administration. Last time I checked my history books, he was a Republican. His entire administration was advancing neoliberal globalization. The Democratic Party was late in showing up, but it was led by Bill Clinton in moving in that direction. So at a certain point, both parties fully embraced neoliberal globalization, and that's true. But it was the Republicans that really shattered the wall on this. And so when you have someone like Vance, I mean, it's completely disingenuous, you know, making those cries. It was the Republicans who were constantly advancing that, who were constantly advancing takeaways, and who are now once again debating reducing Medicaid, threatening Medicare, and other things. They're back to the same old gimmicks.
Now, you've been writing about Trump in the fascist movement. It's not just Trump, and it's not just Vance, and it's not just, right, you know, a handful of people. Fascism is a mass movement, and that's Trump, right, has a mass base. I'm wondering, what percentage of Trump voters do you think are in that fascist movement?
I would put it like this. When I look at U.S. history, there seems to be among the electorate somewhere between 25 and 30% that consistently are reactionary.
Ooh, that's
high. Yeah, it is. But the positive side is it means 75% of us are sane, even if we don't necessarily agree. And I think that's what we have to deal with. I think that one of the mistakes, Matt, that has happened on the left, and we saw it with the Occupy movement, was the notion of the 1% against the 99%. It led many of us to believe incorrectly that there really was no social base to the oligarchs, and that it was really us against the oligarchs, as opposed to understanding that the oligarchs have a very significant social base. And that social base is complicated, because that social base is not an instrument of the oligarchs. It's a social base that sometimes unites with the oligarchs and sometimes is angry with the oligarchs.
So who is Vance, in that social base?
Well, let me just say something about Vance, because it helps us understand this. So Vance gives this whole anti-elite thing. But if you listen to Vance, this is what he's saying. He's saying, I'm angry. I'm angry as hell. Why? Because you all wouldn't let me in. He's not saying that the elite is itself a problem. He's saying, I'm angry because you would not let me in. And that is what that then translates down to the base, where you have masses of people, mainly in the middle strata of the economy, who are feeling crushed by the rich and fearful of the poor. And they feel like they're losing out on the American dream, and they want to do something, and they are inspired by right-wing populism and by fascism. That's what I think we're up against. It's not mainly, and this is interesting because you have all of this stuff in the mainstream media about white workers this, white workers that. The MAGA movement, just like the Tea Party movement, its fundamental social base wasn't among workers. It was among middle strata. It was more skilled trades. It was more small business people, as well as the wealthy. And so this is something that gets misled, because in the media they say, well, a definition of class is whether you've graduated from college, which is BS. You've got all these small business people who graduated from high school, particularly white folks. And so it's not, that doesn't describe what we're up against.
So we're up against this fascist movement with a fascist leader in the White House. How do we respond? That's the crucial issue. And then, Angela, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Okay, so quickly, how do we respond? The first thing that we have to do is get away from mourning and despair. Yes, we got our asses kicked on November 5th. Okay, fine. Now, get over it, right? The next thing is that we need to begin thinking about how to move forward. And central to moving forward, Matt and Angela, is the idea of united fronts, that we need to unite the various forces that have no interest in a MAGA future. And we need to be prepared for a variety of defensive battles as well as some offensive battles. So by defensive battles, I mean, among other things, protecting migrants, both documented and undocumented, who are subject to being rounded up. The MAGA forces have increasingly over the fall talked about not going after just undocumented, but they've used this term remigration. You may have heard it. That was a term that these European fascists have invented for ethnic cleansing. We have to be prepared to protect migrants. We have to be prepared to provide legal assistance as well as mobilizing, much like the unemployed councils did in the 30s when people were being evicted. We're going to have to show up in force and to block them. So that's one of the things that's going to be important that we undertake. Another thing that's going to be happening is there's going to be an attack on a federal workforce. And federal unions, like the American Federation of Government Employees and others, need to have a mobilizing counter strategy. Now, that is antithetical to the way most of these unions in the federal sector have operated. But they're going to need to mobilize, and they're going to need to talk with the larger public about what the Project 2025, now Trump agenda, is going to be in terms of possibly eliminating 30% of the federal workforce and replacing them with appointees, right? So that's a second defensive battle. There's plenty of others. But let me say something about the offensive. I would argue that the Achilles heel of the far right is the environment. They don't have a response on the environment outside of genocide. And it's really important that the environmental movement move outside of Washington, D.C., and really start talking to people about responding to the environmental challenges. And I don't mean just simply recycling material. I mean, for example, these super storms that have hit us. The super storms are indicative of what we're going to be seeing in the coming years. But the other part of it is that the hollowing out of our social systems and our social net has meant that people have to survive on their own, whether it was a result of COVID or whether it's a result of superstorms. The right has no response to that. The environmental movement does impart and should have more. And so we need to be plowing ahead around issues of the environment, around environmental devastation, around what that means in terms of rebuilding healthcare, rebuilding social care, et cetera. That's where I think we can win right now. That to me is comparable to Doolittle's raid on Tokyo in 1942. We've got to shake up the other side and show people they are not invincible and we can actually kick them in their rear.
We need certainly to do something to get our spirits back up and to show that we're just not taking it lying down. That's right. You know, people are so devastated after November 5th. So I think that's really good advice. Angela, I'm going to throw it over to you as soon as we come back from this break, because I want you to engage with Bill Fletcher here and tease him out a little more on how we defeat fascism. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm subbing in for Maggie Dawn today. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. And we're going to be back here in just a little bit to pick up this conversation with Bill Fletcher Jr. Bill Fletcher Jr. Is one of the leading left-wing activists and intellectuals in the country over the last several decades. And he's got a lot of important things to say on how we need to move forward and counter this reactionary phase. We'll be right back. They shot you, Joseph's eye. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe. I didn't die, says Joe. I didn't die. And standing there, as big as life, and smiling.